From Tally to Cali,
it's time to wake up.
Wake up. WarChant.com is your ultimate Seminole sports source.
And this is Wake Up WarChant,
presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.
One more Corner Pocket.
Now here's WarChant.com's Asan Hajivandi
and Corey Clark.
Wake up! What is up, everybody? It is Wake Up War Chant. It is presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, Tallahassee, Florida. CPTallyBar.com is the website. Coming up on today's show, observations from Tuesday's practice. WarChant.com, the ultimate Seminole sports source. The launch special, everybody. It's running low on time. A whole bunch of you have joined, which is awesome. There should be more, though. Go over to WarChant.com. And sign up. It's only $1. For how long, Corey?
I mean, for a full year, Aslan, or 4 months, whatever you choose, but I think you're going to take the full 12-month calendar year. Yeah, you get it for a full year for $1. Not $1 a month, $1. Sign up with your credit card for $1, and that's all you're charged for an entire year. You can cancel it anytime, but you won't. Because the content is too good. And what are you going to do? Like, I know, you know, you get to hear us every day. You don't have to, you're not giving us a dollar every day. But, you know, what are you going to, you're going to want to read quotes. You're going to want to read stories. You're going to want to read Iris columns.
The 3-2-1.
Yep. You're going to want to read that. You're going to want to Gene's takes. All the stuff on the message boards. My columns occasionally you might even want to read. All the stuff, all the great stuff that Aslan's doing. Austin, Langston, the recruiting tidbits. Like, all for a dollar.
Tom
if you've
Lang,
never been on a message board, if
Tom
you've never
Lang,
been on one, do it.
Yeah. Join.
For heaven's sake.
Come on. It's a dollar. And for real, you can cancel if you don't like it any time. Like, no penalty. So,
but why would you? It's just a dollar.
Just, you know, I don't want people to think they're, you know, we're not locking you into something. It's a free country.
No, that's so what I'm saying. So what I would do is, like, set, you know, join today, August 10th, then set a reminder on your phone. Hey, on August 8th of 2023. Hey, man, my credit card's coming up for renewal for War Chant. Let's make, you know, and then you give yourself 363 days to see if you want to stay a member, and you will.
Yeah, because we'll be getting ready for national title run in 2023. So
yeah,
you're not going to want to.
And you're just going to be sitting on the sidelines? Come on, man.
5-star rating and review on the iTunes, Apple podcast app, whatever it is. I have it. I don't even know what it is. Thumbs up on YouTube. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel as well if you would like. But, you know, go to warchant.com. $1 takes you far. All right, Corey, fresh off a trivia hosting session at the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, which we are presented by every day here on the program. A reminder, we will have a live show Thursday night, 6 p.m. from Jacksonville. It'll be originating from Jacksonville, Florida, because we'll be there covering the football team on their two-day little mini camp on the campus of the University of North Florida. But while your folks are here in Tallahassee, go to the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, get your daily lunch special, throw some darts, shoot some pool, hang out with some good people. And it's fantastic food. By the way, like the Build the Burger on Mondays, it's not just like ground chuck. It's Angus beef, everybody.
Yeah,
they're not
real.
Messing around there. It's, I don't want to call it like high-end, like highfalutin, high-con, but man, if you think you're just walking into some, you know, pool den, you got another thing coming at the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. Great
food. I'm telling you what, I've talked to Bill, the owner, multiple times about it, like asking, like, why is your food so good? Much better than you would think it would be, just because it's a sports bar, and it stays open until 2. And he said he goes to the same distributors that many national chain restaurants that you know that you would think are like high-end chain restaurants, whatever you might think. Not Ruth's Chris, maybe a step down from that, but above, like, let's say Olive Garden, somewhere in the middle there. And he uses the same distributors that those restaurants use. So that's why the food is so good. And it is really good. Plus, they got frog legs now on the menu, Aslan.
Excuse me?
Yeah, they got frog legs.
Wow.
Stephanie wasn't a big fan of the way they looked. I ate them. They taste great.
Like
so
chicken.
If you're adventurous, like get yourself some frog legs.
Okay. Do they serve gator?
They
gator
do.
Bites?
And
okay.
Yeah, they do. They serve gator. They serve ribs. It's all good, man. Literally, I haven't had anything bad there.
Everything's awesome.
And if I had, I wouldn't tell you, but I wouldn't have said what I just said. Right. I wouldn't say I haven't had anything bad if I had. I'm telling you the truth in that. What I want to specify, Aslan, is I wouldn't say, well, don't get this.
Right.
This isn't great.
Right.
I would never say anything like that, but I wouldn't say nothing I've had. I haven't had anything bad if that wasn't true. That was 45 seconds. Bill, you're welcome. I hope you listen to that whole thing, buddy. You are welcome. Money well spent, my man.
All right, let's get to it. Tuesday was day two of six consecutive days of practice for Florida State. Again, Thursday, Friday, they'll be practicing at the University of North Florida in Jacksonville, Florida, coming back to Tallahassee to scrimmage on Saturday. 6 days in a row. This is day 11 of camp. They did the last sort of quarter, maybe the last half of practice inside Doak Campbell Stadium. It was a squatcha. It was hot, but we survived. And I don't know if this is...
It was a lot less hot in the shade.
Yeah, but I feel like you guys lost shade. You guys went all the way up to like row 77 at Doak.
Right. But that's fine. It was shady. Yeah.
Well, good for you guys. You're smart. Smart play. I don't want to ruin a potential content item here if Ira's listening, but I feel like maybe on the Sunday when camp is over, and I don't know if it's actually a Sunday, but maybe like on the last day of camp, if we need something, I feel like we should revisit the top 40 and maybe everybody gets like three mulligans. Or at least can, you know, recalculate some guys, like stock up on this guy, stock down on this guy. While we dive into the observations here, the one guy that I would for sure have on mine that I would like to adjust would be Johnny Wilson. Listen, I just didn't buy it that a guy that big doesn't perform all that well at Arizona State at a place where he's probably going to get a lot of looks. He had drops, you know, crucial situations against Southern Cal and BYU. And then in spring, we saw him kind of struggle a little bit at times with possessing and holding on to the ball. Man, he's a weapon. He is a weapon. He is a legitimate target. He is making tough catches. One of the touchdowns that he had inside of Doak Campbell, I think that was off the arm of AJ Duffy. I mean, was thrown low and outside, which I don't think it had to go there, but it was smart enough of AJ to put it there, because the only person that would be able to get it would be Johnny Wilson. And man, he slid on his elbows and caught the ball cleanly. And he also caught one over my guy Jarian Jones for a touchdown. Again, I'm not saying 35 catches, but maybe if the over-under at this point was 18.5, I would take the over, and I wouldn't be that worried about him. And he had a really good practice to me. He stood out to me on Tuesday. What about you, Corey?
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was the best player on the offense on Tuesday, and it wasn't all that particularly close, honestly. Like, he caught right away the first 11-on-11 they do in the IPF. That just really... the tempo drill that they do. Mm-hmm. He caught a pass right on the sideline from Rodemaker, contested catch. Renardo Green was right there, but he caught it, got out of bounds for the first down. He made a really nice catch in 7-on-7. It might have been 11-on-11 now that I think about it. Or I can't remember. He took a hit. So it was 7-on-7s. But it was one of those. It's about a 25-yarder down the sideline. Really nice ball.
I remember
and
that
he
one,
took a shot from Sidney Williams,
yes,
and hung on. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of stuff you want to see, man. He caught everything, but they weren't just, hey, Johnny Wilson's tall, he caught that, or he's running free, he's wide open. He was making the contested catches that he's here for. Mm-hmm. He's not going to run past anybody. He's got to make the catches where guys are near him, where he's being contacted. It's like a dude in the post in basketball. You have to be able to score even when you're being fouled and they're not calling it, because you're always going to get fouled. If you're a big, muscular guy, they're going to let the dude behind you, you know, hit you and bump you. And you've got to be able to withstand contact and make a shot without begging for a foul call. So Johnny Wilson's going to get interfered with. He's just too big not to. He's going to be grabbed. He's going to be pulled. Guys are going to try to run through him because they don't think it's fair that he's 6'7 and they're 5'11. And they're probably going to get away with it a lot because of that size difference and just human nature of referees. They're going to let the 5'11 guy grab if they think it's a disadvantage. So he's got to be able to withstand contact and still make catches. And that's what I've been really encouraged by, really all camp. He's just made some really difficult catches, and he's done it consistently. And Tuesday was by far his best day. Like we said, he had the two touchdowns. He had a couple other ones, really good catches for first downs and down the field, middle of the field, sideline. Just, he's noticeable, man. And that's a... he's been a really big – he could be a really big difference maker. And we were talking about this on headlines on Tuesday. When you factor him in along with maybe Deuce Spann, well, now think about what Florida State's running out wide. Just say they have, for the sake of argument, because I don't even think this has happened, but you have Deuce Spann on one sideline, Johnny Wilson on the other sideline, and Micah Pittman in the slot. That's different than they've had in a long time. You've got a guy in the slot that can go make plays. They can turn a 4-yard pass into a 40-yard pass. You've got a big 6'7 guy that's a mismatch for anyone. He's just a mismatch. There aren't 6-7 corners out there. Correct. I'm not saying he's going to have 1,000 yards receiving, but that is a mismatch, and that's somebody you've got to deal with. You've got a game plan for the 6'6 kid out wide. You've got to have a – just like they did for Greg Carr. And Johnny Wilson can be maybe better than Greg Carr, but maybe he's just Greg Carr, which still, what do you have, 30 touchdown catches or something crazy? Yeah. Like, Greg Carr did some things.
It's like top 4 in program history or something.
Yeah,
like,
you had to factor for Greg. I mean, I meant more of like a complete receiver.
I gotcha.
But yeah, he's
all he does is catch touchdowns. All Greg Carr does is catch touchdowns.
You ain't lying. So you have him on one side who's a matchup that you have to like. He's on the top of the scouting report, 14. If he reaches his potential, I'm talking about. And then on the other side, what if Deuce Span is something? Okay, now you got a 6'3 guy that can run faster than anybody on your defense.
Stop shortchanging these guys. Johnny Wilson 6'7, Deuce Span 6'4. Corey, come on.
Oh, sorry,
man.
My fault. So imagine that. Now, if Deuce Span is something, and again, it's 2 weeks into a practice. He's been playing receiver for 5 minutes. So I'm not thinking he's going to have 40 catches this season. But if he can reach his potential at some point this season, along with Johnny Wilson, those two guys out wide all of a sudden look like Florida State guys again. 6'4 dude that can run faster than anybody on the defense trying to cover him. A 6'7 guy that you just can't cover, like you don't have anything to match up with. And then a dude in the slot that can really play. And what if Winston Wright comes back? All of a sudden, it's weird. It's just like these last, I don't know, 4 or 5 days with the emergence of Deuce Span and what maybe he could be. And then, and again, we'll see. And then Johnny Wilson and what he can be. You start getting, you know, I don't know, little, you start thinking that the potential for
Orange
this
Bowl?
Offense.
Orange Bowl?
No, but the offense can actually do some things down the field that aren't just going to be broken plays or something off the run game.
Yeah.
Just somebody being confused off the run game, thinking, you know, a safety thinking Jordan Travis is going to keep the ball. Like, they can actually win one-on-one battles at the wide receiver position, which just hasn't happened much lately.
Yeah. The touchdown that I thought, you know, Johnny caught over Jarian, it kind of reminded me of the touchdown that Florida caught over Jarian, which I thought was really good coverage in Gainesville this past season.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good coverage on Johnny, too. So I am by no means down on Jarian. I don't know if I'd adjust him up one or two spots on my top four. I don't have it readily in front of me, but I would move him up there. On the flip side of it, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Corey, and I really do mean it. Correct me if I am wrong.
Oh, buddy, I will.
Mildly disappointed with my guy, Amarion Cooper. You know, I don't think he had a great day. He didn't have a bad day, but he didn't have a very good day on Tuesday. And he's had some moments in practice where it's like, you know, I never marketed him as a shutdown guy. I just marketed him as a really consistent cornerback that I thought would be able to cover quite well, which, you know, maybe a little bit short of a shutdown cornerback. But there's a lot of stuff that's kind of going towards his way that's being successful for the offense, and I don't like it, man. Tighten up, Duke, please.
So I will say this, and I don't think you were out here for this part of it. He did have a pick six on the first pass of the It was, I don't know if the receiver went inside when he was supposed to outside.
Well, hey, okay, let's not go too.
No, I'm just saying, I'm trying to say that it was good coverage,
okay. But
I don't know whose fault it was. When you hear a pick six, you're like, oh, the quarterback sucks. I don't know if it was that or not. And I'm not, but it was, Cooper made a nice play on the ball.
All right, good.
Very early on, and that's a pick six. And, you know, it was
Saturday, would it be a pick six in real life too?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. But it was 7-on-7, and it was not their normal 7-on-7. It was a 7-on-7 when they're trying to work on some stuff to one side of the field. But anyway, great read by Duke, and he made the play. But to that point, he also gave up a long pass in one-on-ones where the kid just ran right by him. And, you know, that's happened too much for my liking, where he's just given up big plays, and he doesn't normally. And look, man, cornerbacks are going to get beat, and they're going to get beat in one-on-ones a lot. There's just a whole field you have to cover, so that can be tough. But there have been two or three times, more than that really, where it feel like he's let a guy just run right by him in those situations, and he's too good a player to have that happen. Now, he comes back. He doesn't let that bother him. And what I liked about him is that he did come back in the one-on-ones and make a really good play later on. But, you know, it's like, I don't know if he's bored or if he's just getting confused, but the first 4 or 5 days, I thought he was excellent. He wasn't giving up anything anywhere, one-on-ones or otherwise. And then, yeah, I think the last 4 or 5 practices that I've seen, he's been just okay, and he needs to be more than okay. The good news is they have some corners now. Look, and I'm not thinking anybody's going to usurp Amarion Cooper and be the starter, but if they are, I mean, you got Jarian Jones who's playing well. You've got the Greedy Vance is in the mix. Obviously, Renardo Green's in the mix. Azaria Thomas is in the mix. Sam McCall, the kid from Jacksonville State. Like, you've got options now in case one of these corners either gets injured or just is struggling. But you go into the season expecting Amarion Cooper to be very good, and so far he's just been okay, in my opinion.
Yeah, fair, fair. What else stood out to you on Tuesday? Anything else offensively, defensively? I mean, special teams, there was a bit of a miss hit on one, I think. There was a bad miss. That was a miss hit.
Yeah, man, I'll say it. It was a kicker. It was the kicker. He was attempting a 55.5-yard field goal.
Oh, okay.
And this is what I want to get across here. And I'd tell Fitzmagic this if I was talking to him. So he tries to kick the bejesus out of a 55-yard field goal. And it wasn't, let's just say it wasn't close at all. It looked like if you had tried to kick a 55-yard field goal. Honestly, am I wrong in that?
No, yeah, it's...
So the next kick he has is a 43-yarder that, I mean, I'm telling you, the 55-yarder might have gotten 11 feet off the ground. It was just as ugly could be. The next kick is a 43-yarder that he booms probably 59 yards. Hmm. Like, it would have been good. It hit the stadium from 43 yards. It hit midway in the net, like a little higher than midway in the net. Perfect. I don't know if it was right down the middle, but it was good. And it hit the net, and he had this, it was high, it was boomed, and it's like, man, he's just got to trust his leg. Like, that kid has a leg. Like, that 43-yarder would have been good from at least 56, but if he'd have just hit his 55.5-yarder like that one, it would have been good, but so that gives me a little, hopefully, if he does attempt a 55-yard field goal, he hits it like a 43-yarder, and he would have plenty to spare. But, yeah, that was I'm glad he came back and did that, because that was such an ugly, ugly kick. Like, you don't really pay attention much in special teams practice when you're watching it. I mean, you want to see if he made it or not, but you're just kind of watching. But a 55-yarder, you kind of perk up a little, like, okay, let's see what he's got here. And then you saw that, and you're like, oof. Let's just say this. If he had attempted that in the Iron Bowl, they would have never returned it. I guess he could have bounced to him. He could have picked it up on the bounce and gone. But for him to come back, I don't know when that was. A minute later, 2 minutes later, yeah. He comes back and drills the 43-yarder, which is something they'll actually have to make. 55-yarders you don't expect anyway. But he hit the bejesus out of it. And I was like, okay, well, that's good to know that it's in there. I just hope he kicks all his 50-yarders like he kicked that 43-yarder.
What about the punt return game? There was one that they let bounce. Wasn't a fan of that one. But then
I didn't see that one. But they haven't done that much, have they?
No.
But who was it that let it bounce?
You know, the guy that we wanted, the guy that we're really
okay. Well, that's going to happen. On, you know? But as long as he's not running away from him,
he wasn't. No, he just kind of trotted out. I mean, he did the whole fair catch and then started running, jogging forward because I think he thought it was going to bounce and go into the end zone, but it bounced and then he downed it on the two. So,
well, that's a whole different ball game though, man. Like, to me anyway. Now I don't remember which one you're talking about.
I don't know if the instruction is heels on the 10-yard line, and if you do not back up at any cost.
No, that's what it used to be. Yeah. I think I talked to Jimbo about that because people would always lament his guys fair catching it like the 7 or something. He's like, guys, it's not like 1990 anymore. They don't tell you to just put your heat. These punters are too good, and they punt it too high.
That's what I'm
saying.
You got to catch it at the 7 because if it's coming, the trajectory it's coming in at the 7-yard line, that thing is going to take a soft bounce probably.
But I would say that this is what I would say to that, and I agree with what you're saying. It's 4 yards, but it's 4 yards. The problem that Florida State has had is 21 yards. Instead of starting, if you run up and catch it at the 41, but instead you're scared, you let it bounce and it rolls to the 20. The difference between starting a drive at the 7 and starting a drive at the 3 isn't really that big a deal. It is an enormous deal from starting at the 41 and starting at the 20, especially when you have a very good offense. So as long as they're catching those, the ones when you're inside the 10 or the 5 or so, that's, you'd like them to catch. If he can catch it at the 8 so it doesn't roll down to the 1, do it. Have some confidence, but don't risk it if it's any because you can't fumble.
What's
in that
the
spot.
Risk, though? I mean,
if you don't think you have a good read on it, like, okay, well, there is a reward. It's probably not going to happen because it was so high, but there is a reward that the thing bounces into the end zone.
That's
and
true.
Then you get the ball at the 20.
Yeah.
So those ones don't bother me nearly as much as the ones in the middle of the field. Go catch those things, and they've done a very good job of that really all summer that I've, or all fall that I've seen.
Growing up, my dad used to take me to the game at the stadium. We'd watch our favorite team play, and then we'd always eat at Zaxby's. That's why it means so much to me that Zaxby's is the official chicken of college fans. To me, they go together perfectly. It reminds me of my dad and...
Oh, come on, Rep! Are you serious? Get some glasses! Terrible call!
Now, I take my kids to the game, and we always eat at Zaxby's, too. It's tradition.
We're proud to be the official chicken of college fans. Zaxby's, indescribably good.
And don't forget to listen in for the Zaxby's Indescribably Good Player of the Week every Monday on Wake Up War Chant.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
If you guys follow Adam Fuller, the defensive coordinator for Florida State, you're well aware of all the takeaways that happen and when they happen. Renardo Green had one in 11-on-11 in Doak. That was quite nice. So, good for him. That's good. We want to see that. I also thought Jared Verse saw some good flash out of him.
Yeah.
And I want to start almost keeping, because it makes me think about the conversation that we had on the show for Monday where you were talking about, you know, you just threw out a number out there. Like, he might be only getting 12 reps, maybe, you know, somewhere in that vicinity, maybe a little bit more. Because, yeah, I think the reason maybe why I don't see him doing so much during these practices, because I don't really know how much they're really utilizing him. But when I did keep tabs on him for one play, he absolutely snuffed something out in the backfield that would have been, you know, probably a big gainer, but ends up being a big tackle for loss. So yeah, he's alive and well, everybody. I know we don't talk about him probably nearly as enough as you guys would hope we would, but I think it goes back to Corey's point on Monday where not so much pitch count, but you know, they're mixing and matching, throwing so many different lineups in that front four that, you know, he's not maybe getting a Jermaine Johnson 800 rep, you know, sort of.
Yeah, but again, you know, Jermaine wasn't, it's not like they were running Jermaine out
right.
with 35 snaps.
No, they weren't.
August either. And, you know, they. I think the thinking is when people will hear that and like, why is Jared Verse only getting 12 reps? Well, understand that they're practicing for 2 hours. It's not like Jared Verse is not sweaty and huffing and puffing with 30 minutes left to go in practice. He has been worked. They've all been worked. They've all gone through a bunch of drills. They're trying to do drill work and not just, it's not just, hey, go, we're doing 11-on-11 for 2 hours. So he's getting a lot of work done that in a game, obviously, they're not going to practice for an hour and a half and then go play a game. So he'll be fresher. Just, I would assume the same workload, what they do for a daily practice, if you looked at like calories burned and miles run or whatever steps they've taken. I'm sure they all got their iPhones and they're counting their steps or they got their iWatches on. It's probably not dissimilar to what they would do against Duquesne, right?
Yeah, fair.
For a practice. I mean, they're working hard, and he's working hard, and he's getting a lot of reps in the practice. But, yeah, it's not game reps that he gets. All these guys, other than I would say the quarterbacks maybe, all these guys probably, because you only have two or three you're rotating in instead of 12, you get they're all getting probably anywhere in the neighborhood of 12 to 15 reps, I would think. Although I felt like more on Tuesday, Aslan. Honestly, I think it's because they went in a doke. It just felt like they did more situational 11-on-11 stuff than they have in the past.
They did, but I think a lot of the guys that, you know, we would consider like the frontline guys for the defense, I think they were still not out there all the time.
Right.
Or at least not to the level they would be circa September 6th. When is the LSU game?
Somewhere around there. First Labor Day, guys. Yeah. Sunday before Labor Day.
Sorry.
I was going to say, not that this is a stunner, but I thought Jamie Robinson had a couple really impressive plays, breaking up passes. And again, that's just what he does. Yeah. He also really snuffed out a screen pass. That guy, Shaheem Brown had a really good play like that too. Like that dude just is a football player, man. He sees things and it reacts, and it was awesome. There was a pass to the middle of the field early on, and he hits the kid from behind right as he's catching or trying to catch it. The ball falls down. The kid stays down for about a half a second. He was fine, but he stays down for a half a second, and Jamie Robinson does not care one iota. He just he's not like staring over him, like talking smack to him, but he's not all that concerned about him either, in the sense that his job is to go make a play. That's all he's doing in that sense, is to go make a play, and he separated ball from receiver like Jamie Robinson can do, and you're just reminded, and it was so quick, the trigger, like the instinct, the reaction was so quick. You're like, gosh darn, that's right. And then, Aslan, it started getting me thinking, remember what position Jamie Robinson was playing against Jacksonville State?
Yeah, safety?
Nope, he was the nickel.
Oh.
And on that ill-fated play, he's the one that's at the 25-yard line as
probably,
not really hustling, but it's not really his play, when the kids run into the end zone. Mm-hmm. Imagine what happens maybe if Jamie Robinson is the safety on that play. Do you think maybe Florida State goes to a bowl last year? Just throwing that out there.
Why are you bringing it up?
I don't know. I just thought about it. We talked about it a bit on headlines, but just it was so – he's such an instinctual player that – even in that moment, no matter if your coaches have called a crazy defense that doesn't make any sense, he's backing his butt up and saying, well, we can't lose right here. So they're probably going to throw it deep again, just like they did on that last throw. So I'm backing up, and I'm not going to let him catch that. But anyway, it's good having coaches like that on the field. And I think Bethune is one of those guys too.
Yes, he looks really good. Again, that's a guy that I was like, whatever. It's 2022. What does a linebacker do? Diagnoses, triggers. Runs downhill, tackles guys.
And communicates.
Does that, so that's good.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I almost want to talk about Duquesne a little bit. Now that you brought up Jacksonville State, but I don't want to go down that road.
You want to talk about Duquesne?
Well, I mean, I'm going to have to start diving in a little bit to find out what they're about, what they're bringing back to the table. Because, I don't know, I think on the spectrum of Jacksonville State and UMass, they're closer to Jacksonville State.
Yes.
And
they're not. Yeah, UMass was one of the worst, maybe the worst team that's ever played in Doak Campbell Stadium. And they were awful. They were abysmal. Duquesne is coached. Like, they have a program. This dude's been there 16 years.
Why are you going
years.
At Walt Bell like that? What did Walt Bell do to you? What did Walt Bell do to any of you? Why does everybody hate Walt?
I'm just saying that UMass team was awful. This team won't be that. They're an established program. They're coached. They've been coached. This guy's been there forever. I assume many of assistant coaches have been there for a while. So they are not going to be incompetent. They're going to be coming with a game plan, and they're going to be, at least you would think, technically and fundamentally sound. They're just not going to be all that athletic. The difference between them and Jacksonville State, in my opinion, I would think, is Jacksonville State has more Southern kids that are faster and better athletes. Maybe that's a stereotype, but I don't care. I was born in the South, and that's what I believe. South has better athletes. In every sport, the South has better athletes, including horse racing. Secretariat was from Kentucky. He went from Massachusetts. Just throwing that out there, everyone.
Oh, man. Tom Brady's from the West Coast, though, you know? Best quarterback, West Coast.
Well, that's different. Quarterback's different. You wouldn't call him it's weird. Like, I know he is an athlete. He plays a sport. But he's not, like, what you think the traits of a great athlete, like running fast, jumping high,
stuff like that,
he doesn't have that in him.
Right.
But he's still a great athlete. You know what I mean? That's a weird dichotomy when it comes to quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know, hand-eye
like Jordan Travis is a better athlete
than
Tom Brady in athletic endeavors, every other athletic endeavor, except that they're the one they both play. You know, in that, you know, if they played any other sport, Jordan Travis would be better probably and certainly faster and quicker at everything, but not at the sport they play.
Not going to force you. Anything else you want to touch on from practice on Tuesday?
Let's see. Yeah, I mean, there was some stuff. I am...
Courtney's out there making plays every now and then, everybody. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he had a nice
catch. AKA Brock Bowers.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Two.
And Marquise and Douglas had a really nice catch on a throw from Rodemaker over the middle where he snatched it over a linebacker. Really nice catch.
Yes.
Good ball, too.
Yes.
And you know, I thought Rodemaker, as much as we liked him yesterday, I thought he was up and down Tuesday.
Fair.
Had some really nice throws, and he does get in a rhythm. It is fun to watch, but he also had some mistakes. And then the one thing I'd like to see out of Duffy, I'd like to see him just rip it more. I think he's so sometimes afraid of making a mistake that he tucks it and doesn't trust what he's seeing or doesn't just throw to a spot. And I don't think that's unnatural. I think that's probably normal for a kid that, you know, is a freshman or a true freshman. But I'd like to see him take that next step where, you know, he's maybe trusting it more and not tucking it so much. Trusting somebody to get open or trusting one of his guys in a one-on-one setting to go make a play instead of, you know, the alternative. But overall, I thought the quarterbacks were decent. I did think the defense, especially inside Doak, and to set it up, folks, and we won't give away plays necessarily, but it was a lot of situational, like you get three reps on third and eight. You get three plays on third and eight. You get three plays on third and 12. You get two plays on second and 12 to pick up a first down. And if you don't, we kick a field goal, things like that. I thought in that scenario, until they moved the ball inside the five or whatever, I thought the defense played really, really well. Like the offense didn't have a lot of room to breathe at all. I thought they played really well. And I think the one other thing I was going to say that I think we talked about on yesterday's show was because Deuce Spann had such a good, or maybe it was Monday's show, because Deuce Spann had such a good scrimmage, I wanted to see if maybe we started seeing him running with different groups of people,
right,
when he's on the field. I didn't get to see practice on Monday, but on Tuesday it certainly looked like that was happening. That's what gives me confidence that he might actually be a contributor this year. It's not just he's torching these, you know, third stringers all the time. He's moving up, in my opinion, anyway. And again, we don't discuss depth charts. We honestly, truly don't know a depth chart.
Yeah.
I mean, you can figure it out at defense for the most part, but offense, legitimately, right?
Yeah,
we don't have any idea.
Uh-uh.
But he's playing more with the players that we figure are going to play a lot. And that, to me, means that they know that he'd been playing well. He took it over for the scrimmage. And now they're trying to see, okay, is this something now? Is this something? We got to get this guy used to playing with this set of players because we might actually be using them. That said, as we talked about on headlines, what would you set his over right now, August 10th.
Yeah.
What would you set his over under on for catches this season?
16 and a half?
Yeah, I thought 15.
Okay.
So I wanted to do that just to caution people to not think that we're saying he is Randy Moss.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, even now, as good as we think he's been, as a pleasant surprise as we think he's been, we're expecting him to catch a little over one pass a game, maybe. Nobody's here thinking he's going for 50 and 1,100. We're not expecting that. Number one, we don't expect that out of the Florida State offense in general. I think it's going to be more of a run, predominantly run team, run first team anyway. But we're not saying he's going to be, Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, even Tamorian Terry. I don't expect that kind of impact this year. But, man, if he can hit one of those every couple of games, just what that does, not just for the passing game, but what it does for opening up everything else. To have a deep threat that looks like that, so you're not throwing bombs to 5'8 guys, you're throwing bombs to sprinters that are 6'4, man, that just, you don't know what that can mean for an offense. So that's why it's so encouraging that not only has he played well, and he doesn't look like a miss at all when it comes to the transfer portal, he should contribute this year. And if you'd asked me a month ago, I don't think he didn't make our top 40, right? I don't know that anybody put him in the top 40. I think if we did that regrading that you were just talking about, I think he makes it.
Yeah, because for sure. Yeah, he might be the poster child for stock rising on that exercise. Yeah, I got the top four actually in front of me. He didn't even make it on the people outside the cut. Leonard Warner was outside the cut, Jarring was outside the cut, Rodemaker, Fitzgerald, Helton, Mastromano, and Kentron Portier.
I would say of those guys, who'd you say the second one? Oh, Jarian Jones, I think. Jarian would be up and Deuce Spann would be up. As guys that that you definitely think maybe Bryson Estes too.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know if he cracks the top 40 because I would assume he's probably not going to be a part of the starting plans if they have everybody healthy and ready to go. But he has proven that he could maybe be a part of the rotation, and I think they're planning on him being a part of the rotation. So, yeah, man, 2 weeks now, we see there have been some pleasant surprises. And honestly, when you think about stocks going down, aren't many that come to mind, are there?
Ja'Kai at 30, I think. I mean, the run game's going to be good. I mean, and I love Ja'Kai. And that's the thing. Ja'Kai might make real big splash plays, which might end up rendering that a good pick. You know, he'll have three 40-plus yard catches, maybe one against Clemson, maybe one against NC State, you know, in big-time situations, kind of like Notre Dame and Miami. So that could make it you know, on the level. But, yeah, I mean, some of these guys, like, you know, I mean, Sam McCall, 38th, Jarian Jones, 42. Like, I'd swap those guys right now without
– Sure, absolutely. An eye.
Yeah. And Sam McCall's had a good camp by all stretch, but, you know, I think there was a little bit of hope and wish and wonder in that. And then Jarian kind of like, we've seen
Where it. Was Azariah on that?
High, man. Azariah's 26th.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's about right, probably. I don't think – yeah, that's what I'm saying, like – as much as there have been some pleasant surprises, there haven't really been. And it's not like Ja'Kai's been terrible. It's like, golly, yeah, what has he got a scholarship
no,
for?
No, it's just other
guys have maybe made more splash plays that we've seen. Yeah. But remember, Ja'Kai has two big plays under his belt. He has a long touchdown against Notre Dame. He had a long catch against Miami. Those are big moments.
Absolutely.
That you know, even if you get those plays again, he's in your top 40. I mean, that's an impact. When you look at the guys that we thought were going to be good are solid, I don't think there's been one single disappointment. I don't think there's been one discouraging player. And I think they've been a lot of encouraging guys that you're like, okay, that guy might be better than we thought, and he's going to be a play earlier than we thought.
Yeah. And I'm sure you probably can glean this from Tom's observations, which are up on the website for the subscribers. But the run game's actually looking good, man. I mean, to your point about them being run first or depending on the run, and I think that really is going to open up and make Jordan's life probably a lot easier. And if he were to go down at some point, then Tate's, you know, life a little bit easier, although Tate won't command the sort of respect and attention that Jordan's running ability has. But, man, they ran the ball really well inside of Doak on Tuesday. They ran the ball really well. And, you know, when you can create that kind of stuff organically, naturally, you're not really scheming it up, but it's just clean, good football running. Really good sign for what the offense hopefully can be top end. So
and when we say they're running well, understand that the quarterbacks in this scenario are hardly ever running. So it's not like trick or treat, like just it's a bunch of
They get thudded, though. When they do play action, if they do play fix, like if the running back doesn't have it, like they'll get thudded still. They'll get hit like they do have the ball. But, yeah, the quarterbacks aren't getting hit, though. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. So, like, it isn't just a bunch of smoke and mirrors about, oh, yeah, of course they can run. They have a mobile quarterback. That's not really a factor much on much of these running plays at all, really, when the running backs have the ball, I mean. And they're still hitting some plays. It's good to see, man. Rodney Hill, I don't know how much he's going to play this year. Because there are guys in front of him that are good, but man, he's got some special juice to him, man. When it comes to that speed plays, and he looks, I mean, I think he's going to be good, man.
I like him returning kicks more than Trey Benson, and he's been out there returning kicks. So that could maybe be a way for him to get involved in things too. So,
yeah, that's a good point. But they're not going to kick, they're not going to have, you know, they're not going to be receiving a lot of kickoffs, buddy, because they're not going to give up a lot of points.
That's right. That's true.
So overall, I thought, I thought the offense ran pretty well. When you see that kind of stuff, you're like, yeah, now throw Jordan Travis's legs into the mix, along with the way they can block it up. But then you get kind of, a little giddy about maybe what this offense can look like running the ball when you have these kind of weapons. But you also have to keep in mind, like, you know, you're going to play some defenses that are better than Florida State's defense. And are you going to be able to,
not many, but some.
But yeah, and then many that are similar. Are you going to be able to do this against them? Or are you going, because we were talking about this again on headlines. Guys, listen to headlines too, but obviously listen to this. You know, LSU is going to defend Florida State like Clemson did. They're going to try to anyway. Everybody will. Their sole goal is to take away Jordan Travis's legs. That's what Brian Kelly did at Notre Dame last year. He talked about it afterwards, that's the guy that really scares you because of his mobility. And for the most part, other than that last run that Jordan Travis had on the last play he was in the game, he didn't do anything with his legs. They really did a good job of taking that away on top of what Clemson did taking it away. So that's the kind of defense you're going to see. Can these receivers, and Jordan Travis for that matter, can the passing game make them pay? You know, they did a few times against Notre Dame now. Remember, they had 28 points before Mackenzie Milton came in the game.
Yeah.
And they finished with 38. So they did make them pay through the air for some of that. They hit some big plays. Can they do that against LSU? Can those receivers? Deuce Spann's never really done it at this level at all. Johnny Wilson's played in some big stadiums and some big games, but he's never been counted on all that much. Micah Pittman's never been counted on all that much, although he's played in some big games too. Can they be the guy? Can they torch these defenses and win their one-on-one battles and make safeties back the F up so then Jordan Travis in the running game can slice through them? That, to me, is the key to the whole season. And Tuesday, I thought, was a step in the right direction.
On the way out, any thoughts about the rights deal here now, the Big Ten, ESPN, ABC out of the picture, which is crazy. They've had rights in some regard of Big Ten football since, I think, like 82 or maybe 81. I don't like it simply because, you know, it's kind of, I think, like about the NHL. The NHL was still operating all these years, everybody. But now that they're on ESPN, like SportsCenter will talk about it, and they'll talk about the NHL and all their programming.
Right.
But, man, they were not talking about the NHL from, I don't know, like 2007 or whatever, since they went to NBC. They just want to talk about it. And
I feel like it was longer ago than that. It disappeared from ESPN like in the late 90s.
Yeah, I think, yeah, after they went on the lockout and stuff. But, I mean, this is, if you're going to hold and own all the SEC, I mean, you can't ignore the Big Ten all that much if Ohio State's 10-0. But, man, you can maybe ignore Ohio State when they're 4-0, 5-0.
What do you care? You're an ACC guy.
I know, but
are you talking about just long term?
I watch ESPN. I don't want to just see nothing but the SEC when I'm watching ESPN talking about college football.
Yeah, gotcha.
CBS and NBC are in the mix. They're parsing this out. I mean, they're going to split it up. CBS and NBC are going to spend $350 million each for 7 years. So that's $700 million. And then ESPN declined to get involved in this at $380 million for 7 years. So, and that was going to have fewer marquee games, which is crazy to think about because CBS and NBC paid $350, and I'm guessing they're probably getting more marquee games. They were going to charge ESPN even more than that and not give them as many good games. So they're still part of their package that's out there. And, you know, the rumors are going to get $1 billion for this thing. I mean, they're already at $700 million between CBS and NBC, and there's still another piece of this package left.
Well, there's also Fox.
Yeah, that's right. And they don't show you exactly how much Fox is paying, so that definitely has to push them over into $1 billion, man, $1 billion.
What I'm interested in, what all Florida State fans should be interested in, if this, and this is, it's always so hard to get it all public, but a public record and get the actual numbers and the dates, but they will say at some point how long the contract is and what the when they have like a look in where they can renegotiate the contract, like after 2 years, after 4 years, is it going to be a 7 year deal? Is it going to be a 5 year deal? What is the length of this contract? Because for Florida State's concerns, man, I'm telling you, I know we all want to go to the SEC if we had to choose, but the Big Ten coming at Florida State and Clemson makes more sense than the SEC coming at Florida State and Clemson. The Big Ten needs to have a footprint in the South, a big one. It needs better football programs. And you would think CBS, NBC, Fox understand that and understand that getting Clemson, Ohio State, and Florida State, Michigan would be enormous ratings. It would be huge for the brand. And so that's what I wonder is, like, okay, obviously Florida State's not joining the Big Ten next year, but will they have a chance? Will CBS and NBC or whoever locks this up with the Big Ten, will they have a chance in 4 years to look back in, or 3 years, and go, all right, this was okay, now let's add these guys. We need these guys in this conference. And when we get these guys in this conference, we're going to renegotiate, and it's going to be more pie for everyone. Because obviously we're going to be still having to, you know, it's going to be a huge deal. It's going to be even bigger. We're going to pay you even more, but we're going to pay you more if you bring in these schools and make it worth our while. So that's because TV money runs everything. It runs the world. It certainly runs college sports now, sadly, but that's the reality. So don't you think that is the key for Florida State? They have to be wanted. If the Big Ten comes with a real push and a real offer, and the Big Ten would be, I don't care about AAU nonsense. We're in the game of making money, man. UCLA isn't bringing you anything. I know you're saying you get the LA market. People in LA watch USC football. You already got that. Stanford would not bring you anything.
Stanford brings you Notre Dame, probably. Or Notre Dame brings you Stanford.
So maybe. Notre Dame's probably the next domino to fall. But imagine a TV deal with Notre Dame, a conference with Notre Dame, Michigan, Ohio State, Florida State, Clemson, North Carolina, Miami, Wisconsin. I mean, that would dwarf the SEC, man. Probably dwarf is too strong. It would be bigger than the SEC. And isn't that what the Big Ten wants to do? Is this not an arms race now? And the biggest splash you can make is go get some behemoths who have proven they can win national championships. Multiple, all of them. Florida State, Clemson, and Miami have all proven they can win national championships. And if they have the resources, they can get the Big Ten to where maybe it's the Big Ten that has 6 of the 9 top-ranked teams in the country. Maybe it's the Big Ten that's fighting to get 7 teams in the playoffs or 5 teams in the playoffs. Because imagine Florida State and Clemson with Big Ten resources. It just wouldn't make sense to not at least explore that. And when that happens, maybe the SEC comes in and says, we don't want Florida State going there, so we got to get them to keep them from going to the Big Ten. That's where I think it all goes at the end of the day. But this contract, at least, I just want to see the stipulations and when they can go back in, if it can be torn up, if new teams are added. Because everybody knows that they want Notre Dame. So and they should want Florida State and Clemson. So will they have an avenue to do that before 2036? So there you go. That's my take on it.
Strong. Good take to go
out.
Hey,
thanks, buddy. I appreciate it, man.
We'll be watching practice Wednesday, and then we're going to get into a car, and then we're going to drive to Jacksonville, Florida. We're going to set up shop for 2 days. We'll do a live show Thursday. That'll be your Friday podcast.
From your hotel room? Maybe from your balcony? Where do you want to do it?
I don't know. Yeah, wherever. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
I think I booked you a king-size bed.
Okay, thank you.
So maybe we can both sit on different sides of the bed or something and do it like that.
Okay, all right.
Just throwing that. We could be in the same. When was the last time we recorded one we were in the same room?
Probably IMG.
Have we ever done a live show in the same room?
No, we've never done a live show in the same room. I don't think. No.
Yeah, we could make history, man.
All right, we'll do that. And we'll probably do some kind of Renegade Express. Maybe it'll probably be up on the site right now. So go in there. It's only going to be open for a very brief time so we can knock it out and then get on the road to Jacksonville. Thank you for listening to Wake Up War Chant, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. Hit the thumbs up on the way out. I think we earned it. Maybe a 5-star rating and review. Corey's earned it. And sign up again for warchant.com. It's only $1. I mean, $1. $1. $1.
It's one more cent than 99.
I mean,
it is one less cent than 101. Come on, man. Don't you love us? Don't you like us? You're listening to us. You've listened this much and me ramble for 20 minutes.
Come on.
Come on, man. Just a dollar. Even if you don't plan on ever going on the site, which is dumb, just give it a taste. Just wet your beak. Just dabble around a little bit. See what you like. See if you like the way I post on the message boards. You get to interact with me on the message boards, and Ira, and Gene, Aslan. We're all on the message boards. Langston, you can ask him questions about recruiting, and he'll answer them right there. You get all that access for one measly dollar.
I mean, sign up for it and hold on to it, and then maybe give it to somebody for Christmas if you don't want it by Christmas time. If I'm over it, give them the login. Take it over. Here, it's yours now.
What a Christmas present that would be.
Amazing.
Here's my login.
Here's Warchant. Here's Warchant. Yeah. Can't beat it. For Corey, I'm Aslan. Thank you for listening to Wake Up Warchant, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.